Okay, you there?
I'm here.
Well, hello. This is Jeff Gaudiosi, and you are on MisplacedStraws.com, where music comes to life. And my conversation today is with a guy that really has done it all, from rock star to Broadway performer to actor and now an author. You probably know him best as the drummer for the vastly underrated Theo 2, but he's here today to talk about his new book called Start With a Dream. Please welcome Joey Quesada. Joey, welcome.
Hey, buddy. What's up? How's it going?
I'm doing well. How are you doing today?
Oh, fine. Great.
Well, let's start with the book. It came out in January. It's been a great success. You've been at the top of the Amazon charts a few times. What led you to decide you need to write a book?
It's funny. It really just happened organically. I thought about writing something for my kids just so they had some. I have two small children, and I thought, let me write stuff down. You know, I did a lot of fun stuff in my life, in my career, and I just wanted to have something for them to look back on, maybe to read over one day or kind of, you know, look back on and get some inspiration from. Both my parents are gone right now, and, you know, there's so many things that I would have loved to ask them about their lives now that I'm an adult and I just understand more about life and in general. And I never got the chance to do that, so I didn't want, gosh forbid, anything ever happened to me, the same thing to happen with my kids. So, I originally just started jotting stuff down for them and, you know, thinking one day maybe they would read it and I would maybe have a file on my computer for them or something like that. And, you know, once I really got into the thick of it, it just started flowing out of me, my story. And I had a couple of people proofread it for me and look it over, and everyone really encouraged me to release it. And they said what a great, fascinating story it was. And I said, yeah, well, you know what? Why not? What the hell? So I gave it a shot. I self-published, and I hit number one on Amazon. It was insane.
Yeah, it's funny that you say it kind of starts when you were, you know, wanted to just kind of document it for your kids. It almost sounds like the same story when you read the interviews of why Springsteen wrote his book. It's like, well, it's fun to document stuff, and it turns into, you know, what it becomes. Now, are you the type where, like, you wrote all this down, sort of kept a diary or a journal throughout your career, or did you have to kind of sit back and try to remember it all as you were writing?
No, I never kept a journal, never really wrote down, like, dates and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But I was always conscious of my career. I knew, you know, in my book I write about these things called my frozen moments. And mm-hmm. throughout my life and my career, I've always had moments where I really felt things like freeze for a moment, and I could sit back and look at them almost outside of my body and appreciate them for what they are, whether it was the first time seeing Kiss or me opening up for Kiss on the first tour that I did with them, or just big moments in my life that kind of freeze. You know, I guess in layman's term, you would call it stopping to smell the roses, but
right.
I find it's just more of a spiritual thing that happens to me when something significant occurs in my life. And throughout the book, I really talk about those moments, and those moments build on other stories and so on and so forth. And that's kind of how the book was written. And it's not that I ever wrote these moments down, but all these moments were so significant to me in my life that I remember them, you know, like they were yesterday. So those moments were the first things that I kind of used as bullet points to kind of, you know, lay out the overall story of how I was going to get from A to B to C to D to finally, you know, the end of the story. So I never really actually had a journal or anything, but I did have a really clear memory of certain things that went on in my life.
And, you know, a lot of those in the book really revolve around your time with Theo 2. Like I said, for anyone out there who isn't familiar, definitely check out those three CDs. A great rock and roll band. And it seems that one of the highlights was that tour with Kiss. And, you know, I think for a lot of, especially guys around, you know, a certain age, everyone dressed up as Kiss as a kid. You know, what did it mean to you when ZO2 finally got to tour with Kiss and you developed a relationship with these guys?
I mean, obviously it was incredible. Mm-hmm. Anyone who's picked up my book, you know, the book basically opens up with me. The book is called Start with a Dream, and my dream started for me when I saw Kiss for the very first time at Madison Square Garden in 1979. I saw Peter Criss and his drum set levitate into the air, and I had one of my frozen moments, and I just knew at that moment, this is what I needed to do for the rest of my life. So from that moment when I was 5 years old, everything in my life revolved around whether Kiss and my drums, getting to that point, whether it's to be the drummer in Kiss, which was, of course, always the ultimate goal, or, you know, touring with Kiss, or just being a drummer myself like Peter Criss up on that stage one day. And then finally to get the opportunity, unfortunately, Peter wasn't on the tour that I did. It was actually the first tour with Eric Singer. But to finally get the opportunity to tour with Kiss, not as a fan, not as, you know, as a fanboy, but as a peer and open for them for a whole summer and do almost 50 dates with them straight, it was an absolute dream come true.
What did you learn from watching their show each night that you were, you know, you and Dave and Paulie were able to bring to ZO2?
Well, it's funny because, you know, obviously being a Kiss fan my whole life, I knew the ins and outs of Kiss, you know, like no one else. So nothing they did actually surprised me. Everything was very expected. You know, the one thing that really took me aback, because obviously before I got to the Kiss tour, I was in many other bands before ZO2. Mm-hmm. I played hundreds and hundreds of shows in local bars and clubs all around the world. Not around the world, but around the country at that point. And, you know, at that point, I ran into a lot of people that weren't very nice or weren't, you know, there to help you along the way or would be cutthroat and kind of try to knock you down along the way. And when we finally got to the Kiss tour, you would think them, you know, being one of the biggest bands in the world, they didn't have to give you the time of day. They didn't have to stop and give you pointers or give you compliments or anything, but they were the exact opposite. They always looked out for us. They took us under their wing, showed us the ropes, taught us things. You know, Poison was on that tour too, and they were great to us also. Bret Michaels, Ricky Rocket, CeCe, Bobby, all those guys would talk to us every day and hang out with us and, you know, say, hey, this is great. You should do this. This is so cool. You know, give us all these just pointers that we'd never thought of before. And they didn't have to do that. And they were just absolute, you know, professionals to take the time out to kind of take these new guys under their wing and show them the ropes.
And now your book actually starts off with a foreword from Peter Criss. How did you manage to pull that off?
So again, having Peter Criss write the foreword to my life story, it really brought everything that I ever did in my whole life.
It doesn't get much better than that.
Oh my God. I really made a complete circle. Like I said, the book opens with me at Madison Square Garden, seeing Peter for the first time, and to have him write the foreword to my story, it was one of the most surreal things ever. I've met Peter throughout the years a couple times, whether it's through, you know, Modern Drummer events or different drum events. And, you know, so we've become friendly. You know, I wouldn't call him my good friend or anything, but we've become very friendly. I spent hours upon hours with him just bullshitting and talking and having fun. And I reached out to him to, you know, he was one of the only people that I could have ever even imagined that I would want to do it. And, you know, me never taking no for an answer and never really trying the easy way out, I said, you know what, I might as well shoot for the top. I reached out to him, and his first response, believe it or not, was no. He said, no, Joe, you know, I'm honored that you want me to do this, but I don't really do this type of thing. And if you know, I don't know if you know, but Peter really doesn't do this. He never writes the forward for anyone, never does any of this type of stuff. And he's like, listen, if I do it for you, then, you know, other people are going to either say, why didn't you do it for me? Or I'm going to get a lot of people asking me to do it for them. And I totally understood. And I said, thank you so much for even considering it. And I appreciate you getting back to me. But me being the pain in the ass that I am.
Can't let it go.
You know, it's just not in my nature. I said, you know what? I'm going to give it one more try. Why not? So I sent him an email. I said, Peter, I totally respect your decision, but here's the first chapter. I just wanted to let you show you what you meant to me and what you mean to this book. Because without seeing you for the first time, there would be no book. There would be no Joey Quesada drummer. There'd be none of this. So I sent him the rough draft of the first chapter. And the next thing I know, I'm assuming he read it. He never actually said, I loved it and complimented it or anything like that. But I assume he read it, because the next thing I knew, he sent me a beautiful forward.
That's awesome. I mean, as you said, to have one of your heroes write the forward to your life story, pretty much that's about all you can ask for when writing.
Yeah, it's insane. It's like so many other things that I've done in my life. I encourage everyone to do the same. Shoot for the stars.
Never know if you don't ask.
Yeah, don't think, oh, this person won't do that, or I'll never be able to do this, or I'll never be a big actor, or I'll never be a big movie star, musician. Yes, you will. If you try hard enough and you don't take no for an answer and you shoot for the stars, you can do it too.
And now, getting in your story a little bit, and, you know, all of this is in the book, so again, I encourage everyone to pick it up. ZO2, in addition to being a great rock band, you guys also had your brush with television stardom on IFC, your show Z-Rock. And again, get into it in the book, but can talk a little bit about how that opportunity came about.
Absolutely. So Z-Rock is a funny story. Many people, you know, some people know, some people don't know.
Mm-hmm.
ZO2, our day job to basically fund our band and really fund the Kiss tour and fund our first album, we were kids musicians. We would play little kids' birthday parties as entertainers, and we would sing Wheels on the Bus and, you know, Five Little Monkeys and stuff like that. And that's how we kind of funded all of the stuff we needed to do for ZO2, our first record. The whole Kiss tour was paid for like that. So, you know, a lot of people didn't know that. So after we got off tour with Kiss, you know, we were still doing well. We were riding the high from Kiss, but, you know, to make ends meet, we were still doing that during the day. And we just happened to be playing a kid's birthday party. And weirdly enough, a big agent from William Morris, which is one of the biggest agencies in the country, was at the party. And he came over to us and was like, wait, you guys, you know, don't look like a kid's band. You look like a rock band. What are you guys doing here? And we were like, oh, well, it's so funny you should say that, because, you know, we really are a rock band. This is just kind of our day gig. You should come and see us. We're playing B.B. King's in Times Square tomorrow night. Why don't you come down and check it out? And, you know, we're not thinking anything of it. You know, we meet people all the time. We're constant salesmen. All we do is sell ourselves. So this was just another spiel to another guy at another party. Come and see us. We'll try to get one more body in the room at our show. You know what I mean?
Right.
Never gave it another thought. So the next night or two nights later, whenever it was, this guy comes to B.B. King's and sees us and comes over to us after the show and said, wow, you guys were incredible. I just saw you play, you know, a little kid's birthday party, and now I'm seeing you at B.B. King's with all these people going crazy. This was amazing. So, you know, we again, same type of deal. We pawned him off on our manager. We're like, hey, talk to this guy, you know, he's from William Morris, whatever. So we wind up talking to him a little bit more, and what we wanted to do, we wanted to get into the concert division there, maybe another tour or something along those lines as a booking agent. And this guy informed us, oh, I'm so sorry, I'm not in the concert division, I'm actually in the TV division. So we were like, you know, us thinking quick on our feet, we're like, hey, why don't we do a TV show? And he's like, well, what do you mean a TV show? We were like, well, you know, we're like this Clark Kent Superman type deal, kids, you know, kids entertainers during the day and rock stars at night. Maybe we can do something like that. And the guy was like, yeah, write me up a little treatment and we'll see what we can do. And we basically wrote this one page thing of a scenario that, you know, based on real life, which turned out to be the first episode of Z-Rock. And he loved it and started shopping it and started getting offers immediately.
And again, I mean, it's the show is hysterical, and the episodes, some are up on YouTube. You can get the DVDs from Amazon. It really is hysterical. You know, you guys bring in, I would assume, pretty much everyone you've ever played with, because you have tons of guest stars through the whole thing. So it had to be a pretty fun shoot.
Oh, I mean, it was honestly the time of our lives. We had, as you know, obviously being in a band and being on tour is what we do for, this is what we are ingrained in our body and in our soul. But this TV thing was so new and fresh to us. it was like kids in a candy store. We didn't know, you know, where we were going from left to right. It was just so much fun every day being these exaggerated, wacky versions of ourselves. And then having all of these guest stars who were basically our idols, Dee Snider and Dave Navarro and Daryl Hall and all these great musicians on playing exaggerated versions of themselves and just really having fun with it, we couldn't have asked for a better time in our lives.
And the book really gets into a lot of the ups and downs of the business and how you dealt with all of them. And for all of its successes, you know, ZO2 really wasn't as big as it seems they should have been. What lessons did you take away from the business side, you know, with that whole experience?
So the business throughout my whole life, it's so funny. That's almost how I found ZO2. I was in bands my whole life, and I was always chasing that record deal, and I almost had some big deals on the table from Atlantic Records with one of my old band Exposed. And, you know, we were so close so many times that I was always chasing that golden carrot in front of me, trying to land that record deal. And it wasn't until, you know, I had another band that was all business, and it really burned me out on the music business. And it really, you know, it was all lawyers and contracts, and it wasn't fun anymore. My drums for me weren't, this was before ZO2, weren't fun for me anymore. And at one point, I stepped back, and I was always able to do this throughout my career, which is, I think, what saves me throughout my whole life. I could step back away from the situation and assess it for what it is. And I looked at my situation. I said, you know what? I'm just not having fun anymore. And I wanted to start playing the drums to enjoy it again. And from that, I joined a Kiss tribute band. And just for fun. I knew it wasn't going to go anywhere or, you know, be signed by a Kiss, but I just wanted to enjoy myself again and bring some life back to me playing the drums. And that's actually where I met Paulie Z. And Paulie Z, Paul
was the singer, front man for ZO2.
Right. He was Paul Stanley in this Kiss band. So it just, you know, when I sat back and I, instead of me chasing things all the time, and from that moment on, instead of chasing things my rest of my career, I did what I love to do, and I let that come to me. You know, I always, the old expression, luck is what happens when preparation meets opportunity. I'm so a believer of that. There's no such thing as luck. Yes, things happen to you that you think are lucky, or some people look at my career and they go, oh my God, you're the luckiest bastard in the world. How did you do this? How did you do that? You're right. A lot of opportunities have come my way, but it's because I'm prepared. When those opportunities do arise, I take advantage of them. I'm always ready and prepared. And, you know, throughout my career, that's kind of the model that I've lived by. That's the best business advice I can give anyone. When your opportunity is going to come, but you better be prepared for it when it does, because you're not going to get that second opportunity maybe ever again. And if you do, it's going to be probably 10 years later. So when you do get that small opportunity, you better take it and run with it.
And you've done just that throughout your career. After ZO2 ended, you actually ended up on Broadway on a production called The Great Comet, which, you know, I'm sorry that the run stocks. I think it's something everyone needs to see. Just the way that show was produced was amazing. How did you end up, you know, coming out of the ZO2 experience in a Broadway pit band?
So again, like I said, opportunities arise throughout my career. So one thing leads to another thing, leads to another thing, leads to another thing. And that's really what the book is about. It's really me climbing that ladder, and you could see every step that I take along the way. Like I just said, the Kiss band, and then I took that next step on the ladder, ZO2, and we took another step to Z-Rock. And from that, my old bass player, David Z, who unfortunately passed away almost 2 years ago now, he was a member of the Trans-Siberian Orchestra. And it just so happened that management from the Trans-Siberian Orchestra saw us on the Kiss tour and loved my drumming, and they approached me about being the backup drummer for TSO. And, you know, same thing. Opportunity arose.
Right.
I prepared myself. I auditioned. I got the gig. I've been the backup drummer for TSO since 2004. Wow, since the end of 2004. Yeah, it's been, 15 years I've been the backup drummer for TSO on and off. Mm-hmm. And from that, I met this guy named Orr Matias, who was in the band with me as the backup keyboardist. And he was MDing, which is music directing, this show called The Great Comet off-Broadway. And he reached out to me, and he said, hey, Joe, I don't know if you're into musical theater or what you're doing right now, but would you be interested in this? And it just so happened that a year earlier, I started to try to break into the Broadway scene. I just had my daughter, and I wanted to start calming down on the touring and all of that aspect of my music life. And I started to try to break into Broadway. I would sit into the pit and watch some musicians play, and I went to Rock of Ages and Book of Mormon and tried to break in. And it was just such a hard business to break into. Broadway is a tight group of musicians, and they just do not let any outsiders in.
Right.
So I got this opportunity to do this off-Broadway show. I did it. I loved it. We did it for a couple years, and shortly after, we got our Broadway run with Josh Groban as the star, and that's kind of how it started.
And what's the difference, from your vantage point between the audience at a rock show and the Broadway crowd?
I mean, the whole world is completely different. Yeah. It's a completely different animal. Yes, am I playing my drums every night? Am I playing music every night? Of course I am. The rock world is about feel, and it's about energy, and it's about improvisation, and it's about feeding off of that audience every night. Whereas Broadway, you're on your charts and you're on your book, and you cannot deviate at all. I know, you want to feed off the crowd and you want to feel that energy, but you almost can't let yourself feed off the crowd because you can't speed up. You can't play louder. You can't play lower. There's a set exact way you have to play your book, and that's all you do. So it's a completely different animal. Did I love it? Absolutely. I loved playing in front of the audience every night. Luckily for me, The Great Comet, I wasn't in the pit underneath the stage. I was actually out in the crowd playing my drums every night. So I had people all around me, literally sitting next to me while I was playing my drums every night. So it was a little bit of a better vibe for me rather than just being a pit musician. But it's still a completely different vibe. You have to psych yourself up for that kind of schedule. It's 8 shows a week, 6 days a week. Mm-hmm. So it's a grueling schedule.
And, one of the reoccurring themes in the book is I think it's pretty safe to say you're a bit of a wrestling fan.
You could definitely say. I'm actually watching wrestling as we do this interview right now.
Not surprised. Talk a little bit about the whole wrestling with Joey Licious idea.
So again, in the book, all my life I wanted to either be the drummer for Kiss or the WWF champion. And unfortunately for me, I stopped growing when I was about, 12 years old. I was a really big kid my whole life. I was the biggest kid in every class I was in up until about the 7th grade, and I just stopped growing. I'm about 6 foot now, but, back then I was 6 foot in the 4th grade, so I was a monster. So I always thought I could be a wrestler too, but after I stopped growing, obviously I gave up on that dream a little bit and just pursued music full time. But after I did Z-Rock, I had that acting bug again, and I decided to return to an old love and pursue this wrestling, not real wrestling, but acting. And I literally wrote it, same the way we did Z-Rock, I wrote a treatment for this new show, Wrestling with Joey Licious, which is basically me as a wrestler. I'm in my 40s. It's the true life story of myself. I was a kid. I was a big kid. I always wanted to be a wrestler. I stopped growing. And because of that, I never got to be the big, superstar that I wanted to be. I wound up wrestling in high school gyms for the next 25 years and grammar school gyms and church backyards and, all the lowest rung of the wrestling ladder you can think of. But the twist of the show is these wrestling legends, WWE wrestling legends, appear to me in my imagination throughout the show to kind of keep me on track, even though I'm 40 years old and I'm living at home with my mom and I have no work. I work 1 hour a week. These guys try to encourage me to keep on my path and become the biggest wrestler in the world. And it always backfires. They always wind up giving me, you know, bad advice, or, you know, something always winds up happening where I self-sabotage myself. But all of these legends are involved in the show right now. Anyone you can think of that was from the 80s and early 90s are involved in the show. We just signed our pilot deal, and we're going to be filming in the fall. I can't name the network yet just because it's not official yet, but we're ready to go. It's going to be insane.
We'll definitely keep an eye out for it. And, you know, even with all that and with Broadway and acting and writing, you're still playing. This last year or so, you've been in Eric Martin's solo band, a vocalist for Mr. Big. Pretty great band. You're with Steve Brown and PJ Farley, if I'm not mistaken, from Trickster. What was it like getting back on the road, and, you know, how did that tour go?
Oh, it's great. I missed it. Like I said, after I did Great Comet, I did Great Comet for almost 5 years. Mm-hmm. So I was in that theater world for 5 years, and I was still playing here and there periodically, filling in for people and, you know, doing some cool rock shows. But, you know, I missed playing in a band again, and it was something that once Great Comet ended that I wanted to get back to. And sure enough, it's like, you know, things always happen for a reason. Almost, you know, I think it was the month, I think I was still doing Great Comet when I got the call from Steve Brown, and I know Steve for years, and Steve is an amazing guitar player, and he's like, hey, dude, I don't know if you're interested, I don't know if you're a fan, or, you know, but Eric Martin from Mr. Big, you know, we're doing some touring, and, you know, we might be recording an album, any interest in doing it? And I'm a huge Mr. Big fan, and I jumped at the opportunity, and we've been playing ever since. It's been a blast. We do as many gigs as we can. All of us have so many side projects. Eric's out with Avantasia right now in Europe. So, you know, we all do so many other things that we don't have the opportunity to play as much as we'd like to.
Right.
But it's really been a blast.
That's great. And what's next? Yeah, you know, you have a hand in all of these different media. What's next on the schedule for you?
Again, always busy. You know, obviously the book is keeping me super busy right now. Mm-hmm. I have the deluxe hardcover coming out in the fall that I'm just finishing up with some bonus material, bonus photos, bonus chapters, stuff like that. That'll be released in the fall. And, of course, we're gearing up to start filming the pilot for Joey Licious. That's kind of where my brain and head is at right now, where, you know, we have a really big guest star coming on for the pilot and some really cool character actors for the other members of the Joey Licious family. It's going to be a blast. So, you know, that's really consuming all my time right now.
Well, can't wait to see it. And you had mentioned a little earlier your former bandmate, Daisy, that we lost tragically a couple years ago. I know in June there's another of the annual tribute shows to Dave coming up at the Cutting Room. I assume you'll be playing that show as well.
Yes, I have a tentative date as June 13th. I'm not sure if that's still going to be the date. I think it is.
Yeah, that's what I saw as well.
Yeah, June 13th at the Cutting Room. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll definitely be there. We're hoping to do these more often as much as we can. Dave loved doing stuff like this, getting everyone together to play and do songs and stuff like that. So we find it the best way to honor him and just to keep his, you know, legacy and memory alive. And we just go there and have fun and play all the songs that he either has recorded over the years or just songs that he's loved throughout his career. And, you know, we try to just enjoy the night. We try to celebrate it rather than think back and mourn.
Exactly. It's a celebration of his life and his friends and bandmates. And I encourage anybody in the New York area, if you're around, it's a free show at the Cutting Room. It's always a great night. Some great music, some great people. And if you have one of Joey's books, Start With a Dream, he will sign it for you that night, right?
I definitely will. It's $89.95. I'm only kidding.
Well, Joey, again, thank you so much for taking the time to do this. The book is available on Amazon. It's Joey Quesada, Start With a Dream. We'll have a link to it at the bottom of the page. So if you're reading this or listening to it, it's easy enough to order the book. And we'll look out for Wrestling with Joey Licious in the fall. And again, keep in touch anytime you have something new coming up, whether it's tour dates or a band or new TV show, let me know. We'll get it out there for everybody. And just thank you so much for taking the time.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And just to keep up for everything that I'm doing, you can follow me on social media, Joey Quesada across the board, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Just go at Joey Quesada. You'll find all the updates of where I am, who I'm playing with, you know, what TV show's coming out, what Broadway thing I'm doing. It's just so much stuff to keep track of that, you know, I never know where I'm going to be tomorrow. So follow me on social media. I'm always posting stuff for updates.
Sounds good. Well, again, thanks a lot, and we'll catch you in June at the Cutting Room.
Thanks, dude. Talk soon.
You got it. Bye.
Bye.